Anything too extraordinary.
There we go. We're recording now, Neil Innes.
Wow. Ian Bell.
Ian Lee.
Ian Bell is a wonderful cricketer. I wasn't talking about you.
I'm going to move that ever so slightly closer to you, sir, right, if I may. Yeah, there we go. Yeah. Thank you very much. Hey, it's lovely to meet you. We have to say that the last time you came in, there was a mix-up on times, and we thought you were coming in at 11 p.m.
Yes.
And I got a phone call at 11 in the morning saying, Neil Innes is...
I know, if you do a show at 11 p.m, you don't want people calling you at 11 in the morning.
Well, it was. I was really panicked, and I thought I thought that you'd be furious and storm off in a huff.
I'm sure we can reschedule something.
Okay, but, you were fine with it.
Here we are.
Listen, I'm a huge fan, and let's do some business, shall we?
He's very tall.
you've thrust in my hand a new CD. I'm guessing the best bits.
Yes, in his own world, the best bits.
So what is this?
Part one.
Part one. There's going to be more.
Well, there is. You see, I did a radio show for Radio 4.
Yeah.
About 4 years ago.
Right.
And it was very unusual for Radio 4 because they left me to my own devices. And so I had a wonderful time in a digital studio just doing all the voices and everything and just had a go at radio in a way. And but I think I had too much of a go at John Humphreys on the Today programme.
Oh, really?
And too much of a go at EastEnders with a thing called Saga City. And they thought 4 was enough. But they're in the contract, they're mine after 2 years. So I thought, what can I do with them? And then I just discovered GarageBand. You know, you can put things into GarageBand.
On Mac, yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
And this is like, for me, an ex-art student, it's like painting with sounds.
Mm.
And I can do it myself, not tell somebody else what to do. And so it's that much more instant. And so I've been floating in little jingles, which you could get for free off GarageBand, and just snipped it about and polished it up a bit and made sort of like tracks, if you like.
Yeah.
Of kind of highly produced sort of, you be the judge, comedy.
Well, yes, I'll have a listen and we'll see.
But somehow, and then some other tracks of music.
Yeah.
And in a funny way, the comedy sets up the music because a lot of albums, you just hear one piece of music after another.
Yeah.
But this really does something to your ears. You know, you sort of, hey, this music's great suddenly. And, hey, this comedy's great. I don't know. My grandchildren like it. I'm shutting up now.
That's the main thing. Well, that's good. But how did you kind of, because I remember you growing up as a kid because I used to watch the Guinness Book of Records.
Yeah.
And obviously your association with Monty Python. How, and the Bonzos, of course, let's not forget, you know, one of the greatest vaudeville.
Yeah, let's leave it there.
But you are a brilliant musician. How did the comedy kind of become an integral part of your life as well?
I don't know. I've always seen the funny side of things. I just can't keep a straight face. I mean, how some of the people go about their business as serious pop musicians, I don't know.
Very pompous.
But my peers in the 60s, you know, off camera,
were
very funny guys, you know, enjoyed a good laugh, you know. And so I don't see there's any difference, really. You know, so I mean, I think the human being is meant to sort of laugh and sort of take things seriously.
Yeah.
You can't be one or the other, so why should anyone be that professionally?
Well, now, questions are just popping into my head randomly, so if you don't want to answer them, just cough, and I'll take that as a hint, and if you do, then answer them. That Magical Mystery Tour with the Beatles, how did that come about?
Because the Bonzos were going on the road, and they were kept bumping into the scaffold.
Yeah.
Roger McGough, John Gorman, and Michael McGear, alias McCartney.
Paul's brother, of course.
And we knew that, you know, that the Beatles in the days when they used to put on false beards and go around like very bad spies, sort of go out and see things. Yes,
did they really do that?
Yes, they did.
That's fantastic.
Yes, you know, and so they all knew all about the Bonzos. And in fact, Viv used to hang out with John and Paul quite a bit. And so when Mike suggested to Paul, why don't you get the silly Bonzos in your silly film, Magical Mystery Tour? He said, oh, yeah, what a good idea.
Yeah.
Because we were so busy, it was only one day we could actually do, and that was the day we did at the Raymond Review Bar just around the corner here in Soho, London.
It is a very silly film.
It is a very silly film, but the Bonzos made an even sillier one called Son of Exploding Sausage, which makes Magical Mystery Tour look like War and Peace.
I've not heard of this. What, is this out? Is this available?
Well, it's not. It came as a big surprise to us all because the NFT had a Bonzo night.
Mm.
And they were going to do a quiet little affair in the small thing, but the response was enormous. We had to move into the big thing.
Yeah.
And they announced that they had this film, Son of Exploding Sausage, and those of us who attended couldn't remember anything about it.
That's
and
the
then
60s
when
for
we
you.
Saw it, yeah, exactly. when we saw it, it all came back. We were approached by this guy who had a farm out in Worcestershire.
Already sounds very, very dodgy.
Named after the source.
Right.
And he said, "I'd love to make a film with you guys." We said, "We'd love you to, too. But, you know, our schedule is so intense at the moment. We've got 2 weeks off in a month or so's time where we've got to rehearse for a new album." So he said, "Come and rehearse on the farm." Mm. So, all right. So we went down to this farm in Worcestershire to rehearse, I think, which must have been Donut and Granny's Greenhouse. Because I had Rock Eliza Baby and things like that. Because we just dressed up for the camera a bit, but we stood in a farmyard.
Yeah.
And Larry's playing the drums, and a little pony came up, and we were really playing. A little pony came up and sort of rested its chin on Larry's shoulder, sort of took an interest in what was going on. It was very, very bizarre.
How strange.
Had a traction engine, and it was this strange kind of Mad Hatter's Tea Party with the farmer's children. And it was actually quite sweet, but I mean, in terms of structure, linking back neatly to the Magical Mystery Tour,
yes,
it made the Magical Mystery Tour look quite
made
slick
sense.
And professional.
The Bonzos are a strange band. I mean that in the nicest possible way. That they are bonkers. This weird, because there are some amazing pop songs, brilliant pop songs on there, and rock songs, and then just kind of lovely, lovely nonsense on there as well. Was it? Did you ever start out say, right, we're going to be a pop band in the style of the Hollies, or we're going to? Was that always the plan?
No. First of all, there is no plan. You know,
okay.
Bonzos never had a plan.
Good.
Because we started off collecting old 78s in the street markets for a penny or tuppence, and if you look for a stupid title, you bought it. You couldn't hear it. You have to take it home. Could have been a risk, you know, tuppence, fourpence down the drain. But you got it home, put it on your gramophone, wind-up gramophone, listen to it. Mm. And if it sort of, you know, bore fruit in terms of the comedy, wacky silliness that was around in the 20s and 30s, you took it along and wrote the chords down and said, hey, listen to this, and we ought to play this one.
Yeah.
Because we were all of us doing it independently. And at that time, there were about 9 or 10 of us doing it.
Mm.
We had quite a selection. Mm. So Alibaba's camel hunting tigers out in India. We found it all in the markets. You know?
Fantastic.
The stork has brought a son and daughter to Mr. and Mrs. Mickey Mouse. Hooray!
It's brilliant.
It is, but I mean, we came from fun.
Yeah.
You know, and it was only when, Bob Kerr was our trumpeter at the time, we started doing cabaret up north, and Jeff Stevens had recorded a thing called Winchester Cathedral.
Mm.
It had gone to number one, but he didn't have a band. It was all session men. So he knew Bob. He knew Bob was with this silly band. He rang Bob up and said, Bob, we're in the charts. We're heading for number one, and I haven't got a band to promote the single. How about your lot? So Bob puts the phone down and said, hey, we can be the new vaudeville band, be on top of the pops. And we all looked at him aghast. We said, why? You know. So, you know, no plan.
Fantastic.
And, but the next thing was, you know, we said, well, if you want to do it, off you go.
Mm.
But he did. And unfortunately, you know, he seemed to think that all the look of the Bonzos, the singer in the lame suit, the gangster suits, the two-tone shoes, the kipper ties, the holding up of hardboard painted comic balloons, speech balloons, was all there for the grabs. And of course, everywhere we went, people said, oh, you're like that new vaudeville band. So we sort of house meeting, you know, and we thought, then we decided to write our own stuff.
Yeah.
And it was a great kick up the backside for us, because we did then start looking at everything.
Mm.
But I think we kept the sense of fun.
Mm. Did the Bonzos become big in the States?
Larry ate quite a lot. No.
Huge portions over there.
Huge portions.
Did you see the size of the breakfast they get?
No, we did. We didn't stay there long enough, really. We
went
a couple of times in 1969. And it was a time when all the English bands were over there.
Mm.
It was a great time. We were walking down the street in New York, and there'd be a whistle coming from a long black limousine. It'd be Mitch Mitchell from Jimi Hendrix. Where are you going? Oh, well, hop in, you know.
Fantastic.
And but no one was working much.
Right.
They were sort of hanging out in hotels, because all the managers were sort of using, bare fist diplomacy to sort of get gigs for people.
Yeah.
And so we did a few tours, and Bill Graham of the Fillmore East,
of course,
we played there with Kings and Spirit.
See, that's amazing. Amazing,
said, I've got to have, I can't afford you, but I'll fly you out to the West Coast. I've got to have you.
But
at
so
the
you've
Fillmore
got a load
West.
Of hippies there going to see the Kinks, who weren't allowed in the States for a while, and Spirit.
Yeah.
And then you lot come out with explosions and
It was quite funny. We said, logically, we ought to be in the middle, you know.
Yeah.
One of you guys should, you know, we did it several nights. But they were, both of them refused to go on first. Oh, this is show business, isn't it? But so we said, all right, well, we're not going on first either. What do you mean? You know. So, well, we'll go out as a warm-up band. And we bought PT shorts and vests and came out and did all these kind of health and safety, health and efficiency sort of limbering up things. And sort of ran off in a sort of Olympic opening festival way. And then they put on Bugs Bunny. Then we came on and did our bit. And it was a, it was a hoot.
Fantastic.
It was a wonderful time.
Yeah. Are you aware of the band XTC?
And I've heard of them, yeah.
The singer Andy Partridge, the singer, the songwriter, I'm kind of a big fan of. And I mentioned I was going to interview you. And he said that I must tell you that I think it's Humanoid Boogie.
Yes.
The keyboard solo in Humanoid Boogie is one of the greatest pieces of music he's ever heard.
Well, the opening intro. Da, 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 da,
I think
da,
so,
da,
yeah.
Da, da,
there's like a Moog or something in there, or some kind of... Yeah.
I think it was a guitar.
Oh, was it?
Put it through something stupid.
Oh, I'll
we were putting
him,
the saxophone through the Leslie, the organ Leslie.
Yeah.
I mean, all these toys in the studio then, and you just had to play with them, you know.
But now you can just do it on GarageBand.
I know.
Is it as much fun?
The GarageBand is good fun for sliding bits of dialogue about and floating in all manner of kind of jingles and stuff, which make it sound like the real thing out there. I don't know if you've stopped and listened as you go around, you know, but in supermarkets, elevators, anywhere you go, there's some kind of jingly jangly music going on in supermarkets and behind, you know, voiceovers on television. And all you need to do is introduce some of these to make it sound like the real thing. So you can say the most stupid things. Like, I mean, I really like doing the COD commercials and things like that. I've got a thing which is on the CD called, it's like, you know, feeling peckish, always on the run, you need cock-a-doodle-tato. Cock-a-doodle-tato, the really big potato with the chicken inside. And it sounds just like the real thing, unfortunately. So I'm here. I am, you know, after 40 odd years of, you know, in the front line of satire.
Yeah.
But I know it doesn't make any difference. You know, so I've actually reached a state of graceful futility.
Well done. You know. That's good. Listen, my favorite thing you've ever done is The Ruttles.
Yeah.
Which I think is a work of genius in terms of the film. Is just a masterpiece and stands the test of time. But the music as well is just incredible.
Yeah, I mean, it was just one of those things you could never... I mean, it's probably my favourite thing over a whole career. But it's something you could never, ever, you know, pitch or get made. You know, it happened.
Mm.
It just happened because so many, you know, circumstances and coincidences just made it happen.
Mm. How did you come about to it? Did Eric Idle come up with the script first and then you wrote the songs, or did you have the songs? What happened?
Eric asked me to join him in a television venture called Rutland Weekend Television.
Of course, yes.
And so while we were doing Drury Lane with Monty Python, I actually said to him, because, you know, the Bonzos worked with Eric and Mike and Terry and Terry Gilliam and David Jason, Denise Coffey, on a thing called Do Not Adjust Your Set. And because the Bonzos are all on the road, we never quite knew what we were going to do. Of course, the cameras never knew where we were going to be. And apart from that, we sort of made it difficult by fooling them by not being in the same place twice.
Mm.
So I said, I'm not sure I like television, Eric. The camera. He said, why? And I said, well, the camera never pointing in the right direction.
Yeah.
So he said, well, you can tell it where to point. Really?
Wow.
Ah.
Yeah, the power.
Play with the toys. Okay, you're on. And Rutland, being the smallest county in England, by some sort of nefarious logic, would then be, you know, the smallest TV station in the UK.
Yeah.
And would therefore have the smallest budgets, and it was a license to make cheap television.
Yeah.
Which, let's face it, why BBC Two commissioned it.
Of course.
First place. And so, well, you know, my job was to come up with musical things we could put pictures to.
I've been watching some recently. I've got some Hooky DVDs, I'm completely honest.
Ones.
But it's weird, because your songs in Rutland Weekend TV are kind of like little videos, little pop videos.
They are. We were one of the first people to sort of make them in a way, you know, putting music and pictures together. It was such fun.
Yeah.
But you see, going back to the cheapness thing, it suddenly occurred to me it would be very cheap to do a parody of Hard Day's Night.
Mm.
Four guys, weeks, tight trousers, pointy shoes, running around a field. How hard can it be? Speed it up. And so we did that. And I said to Eric, you know, I've got this. And he said, oh, that's great, because I've got this idea for a documentary maker who's so dull, the camera runs away from him. So these two things were put together in Rutland Weekend Television.
Yeah.
And the big sort of coincidence thing starts rolling. And at that same time, in America, someone is offering the Beatles $20 million each or something to get together. And Saturday Night Live are running with the gag. You know, they're getting George Harrison on and offering him $3,000 in cash, which happens to be the union rate for four musicians at that time of night on network.
I love it.
And he sort of said, what, all of this for me? You know, and Lorne Michaels, the producer, snatching it back, saying, oh, no, you have to share it with the rest. Or maybe you don't have to tell Ringo. These jokes were out there. And so then they sort of said, well, we're getting Eric Idle to host the show because he says he can get the Beatles together for $300.
Wow.
And it gets right up to the wire, and then Lorne comes on and says, well, we have to apologise. And Eric, in fact, couldn't get the Beatles together for $300. It was a bad phone line, but what he'd said was, well, I've got the Ruttles. And they showed the Ruttles, and the mailbag was just
really went crazy.
Yeah. Everybody was ready for the joke.
Yeah.
And so Lorne went downstairs and said, look, I think we've got a situation here to... Can I have the money to make a primetime special? And they said, yeah, go ahead. And, you know, so the next thing I know, they're looking at me across the office saying, can we have 20 more Ruttle songs by next Thursday lunchtime?
And the songs, I mean, the film stands on its own and it's great. If you're a Beatles fan and you know the story, it's even better because there are so many nods and winks in that direction. Yeah. But when you were writing the songs, did you sit down with a load of Beatles records and listen and go, right, I'm going to do a Penny Lane now, and Double Back Alley came out?
I'm shaking my head, listener.
He's shaking his head.
Yeah. No, the thing was, I knew I'd be sunk if I listened to any.
Yeah.
And I tried to sort of go back in my memory to when these things came out.
Yeah.
And remember what I was doing and try and piece together a real life around it. And the hardest songs to write were the, you know, the sort of like the young teenage love things, Hold My Hand and whatnot. And I had to go back to sort of my first dates with girlfriends and to remember the sort of, he's with him and she's with that, you know, and actually get into it almost like method and then sort of find the lyrics. And I have to say the more psychedelic ones are a lot easier to write.
Cheese and onions?
No, that was kind of, you know, that was inspiration. But things like Piggy in the Middle and whatnot. I mean, I threw out lots of...
I tweeted that you were coming on the show today. We were meeting you today. And someone wrote back going, ask Neil what Piggy in the Middle really means. As though there's some deep hidden meaning in a Ruttle song that we're not aware of.
It sounds like this person knows what Piggy in the Middle is because it's someone in there who can't catch the ball.
Exactly. Have you got a favourite song from the Ruttles? Is there one that... I mean, I think they all... Double Back Alley, I think, is probably mine.
Double Back Alley was one of George's favourites.
Really?
Too. Yeah, because let's not forget, you know, the Ruttles wouldn't have happened if George hadn't been so gung-ho for it.
And he's brilliant in the film as well.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, I think he persuaded Mick Jagger and Paul Simon to be in it. Again, you know, it just happened.
Yeah. I miss George Harrison. I never met him. I was thinking about this the other day, but he seems like such a nice bloke.
He's
very shy and quiet and retiring.
Very, very fantastic.
Very humble.
Yeah, a human being. And to be in such a position, he always found a bit awkward.
Mm.
He was never a showbiz animal.
Yeah.
And was always a kind of seeker of wisdom and truth and things like that. And a lot of people think that, you know, well, he was just mystical and rather dour, but not. He was very funny, too.
People think he was weird. Because he kind of followed a slightly more spiritual path.
The poor guy was really unlucky to be in the same band as Mike, as Paul and John.
I know, an amazing songwriter.
Yeah, I know.
With two amazing songwriters.
Well, absolutely. But George's songs will happen more, I think, more and more.
Oh, George's
discovered them.
George is fantastic, an amazing voice, an amazing guitar player. But so Double Back Alley was his favourite. Was that yours or is there...
Yeah, I like that because, in fact, of all the Beatles songs, you know, and again, going back to how I wrote them, I knew I had to do a kind of Penny Lane.
Yeah.
And I, my own head, I went back to sort of like documentaries of childhood and the war years and things like that.
Yeah.
And I said, well, that's why I got the idea for Double Back Alley, because it's a sort of play on Double Back and Back Alley. And, you know, sort of put those together. And so that's one of the ones I did on a piano.
Right.
And the other ones I just did on guitar. And if I could sing the songs on either a guitar or a piano and they worked as songs and they hold your attention, they rhymed and whatever, they had a catchy tune, I knew I'd done the songwriting bit. Because sounding like the Beatles is all in the production.
Yeah, of course.
Really.
Yeah.
And let's face it, everybody has gone down that road
they've tried to
without
sound like
calling
the Beatles.
Themselves Ruttles.
They have to. I saw the Ruttles play maybe 6-7 years ago, I think. Was it the Royal Festival Hall or something? There was some
deal. Oh,
yeah,
deal. No, we did the Queen Elizabeth Hall.
Queen Elizabeth Hall, that
yeah,
was it. That was.
The sound was terrible.
It was a little bit...
Yeah, no.
Ropey, but there was a lot of affection in the room, and I think
overcame the
other
many... thing is we didn't know because the monitors were great. It's usually the other way around. The guy on the monitors is a chimp.
Yeah.
But this time, you know, we were having a great time on stage, and people out front were telling me afterwards, God, it was awful.
Yeah, you know? it was fraught with difficulty.
I mean,
but...
one of those things. I mean, there's another story to that. I was actually thought I'd been booked as a solo.
Is that, hang on, your drinks may be coming in.
I swear I'll leave it alone.
There we go. Sorry. Oh, yes. Neil would only come
yeah,
in.
Oh,
if
look,
we...
a jug of water coming in.
Come
honestly,
in.
It's a jug of water.
Neil would only do this
there.
Gig if there was a bottle of vodka was provided as well. Hello. Oh, are there any glasses?
Yes, there are.
Oh, brilliant. Thank you very much.
And straws. We want straws. Cheese straws.
Cheese straws.
And camels to break their backs.
There we go. Sorry, I was worrying that the drinks would never arrive. Sorry, we're almost done now as well.
Are we? Anyway.
That's great.
A cup of coffee. Oh, that's me.
That was
too.
For you, Neil.
Oh, I know.
Don't worry, we'll cut this bit out. Don't worry. It'll sound a little bit slicker when it goes
just
on the radio.
Just as well, I've been jabbering.
Oh, no, you're very kind. Thank you very much.
That's brilliant. That's okay. It's just as well I didn't have the coffee because I've been jabbering away at a rate of knots. It'll be even worse now.
Would you like a glass of water, Yvonne? Would you?
Oh, yeah. This is Roy Rogers on Trigger.
Are you all right with that, Neil?
Which is how we did Roy Rogers on Trigger.
I'm fine, thank you very much.
There going back to intro and outro. Roy Rogers on Trigger. Anyway,
oh, I've gone all a flutter with you doing
no,
that.
No, I'll tell you what. You know, so I've done my catchphrase at the moment is accuracy is
very apt. Very apt.
Well, the more I look around,
right, God, so the Elizabeth Hall, the Ruttles. Yeah. You were booked as a solo or something.
Yeah, I was booked as a solo, and then it suddenly appeared in Time Out as the Ruttles. And I rang up Mean Fiddle. I said, "What's this?" He said, "No, I thought you were doing the." So I had to quickly put a Ruttle band together. Which actually involved Nigel Planer, Barry Cryer.
Phil Jupitus popped up as well, didn't he, as well?
Yes.
The chap, Barry Wom, I can't remember his real name, the drummer.
John Halsey.
He runs a pub in Cambridge, doesn't he?
He does,
because I got a friend of mine into the Ruttles, and I gave them the CD. He went, I know that bloke, he runs my local.
Yeah, the Castle Inn, Castle Hill in Cambridge.
Good pub,
a very good pub. Lots of beers, good music, and really fine food.
You're doing a gig in Putney.
Half Moon.
The
Putney.
Half Moon.
Yes, it's been saved. It was nearly turned into a bijou restaurant.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, but there's enough bijou restaurants in London, but there's not enough music venues.
What's the venue like? I've never been there. I may be popping down.
It's a terrific venue. In fact, you know, it's unique almost in the sense that whoever's playing there pays them.
Wow.
They pay them for the PA guy and the use of the PA and £1 a head for everyone comes in.
Yeah.
And it's the most brilliant
fantastic.
Way of working things, because they there's your room, use it, whatever. And if you attract a crowd, you get a sort of sensible amount.
And how many does it hold? Is it a nice size?
150.
Lovely.
A bit more.
Now I should know the date. Have you said the date earlier? It's
1st of June.
The 1st of June. Okay. Yeah. I'm hopefully going to pop down and come and have a look. What kind of stuff are you playing? Is it everything? Is it?
I have to sort of include stuff from bits of Bonzo, bits of Ruttle, bits of Python. But the new stuff is going really well.
Okay.
I've only just come back from the States, and it's working well across the pond.
Right.
And it's tongue in cheek. It's called A People's Guide to World Domination. And it's a pretty useless guide, actually, I have to be honest.
What, can you give us any of the tips for world domination?
No, because it's not really a how-to.
Okay, right.
It's more of a kind of point of interest. No, but it's about as much use as the help button in Windows. But it's a start.
Okay, exactly.
I think because we as a species need to rethink our place on the Earth.
Yeah.
He said, all seriously. We do.
We do, yes. In what way?
This coalition government is just the start.
Man alive, that was a wasted vote. Jeez.
Well, now, by some quirk of nature, wasn't it wonderful? The British election system, which there's only one like it in the world, and that's the Vatican.
Yeah.
has the same system, by some freak of nature, comes up with none of the above.
None of the above, yeah, exactly.
And that's exactly what we want. We're fed up with them all.
Yeah.
I bet if we just left it to the forces of law,
yeah,
and order,
yeah,
and civil servants, we wouldn't need any. Imagine 5 years free of any politician.
It'd be fun, wouldn't it?
They actually ought to change the name.
It couldn't get any worse.
Because they don't have any politics anymore. They don't have any policies.
No. They all just say the same
they
thing.
They say, you're rubbish. No, we're not. Yes, you are. No, we're not.
Our turn now. We'll have a go now. And right. You can have a go in 5 years.
I'm rubbish. Okay. No. I was going to say, the last thing Viv and I did was a thing called No Matter Who You Vote For, The Government Always Gets In.
Yeah. It's very true.
Yes.
They
always
do.
It to you. No, I put it to you. No, I put it to you. Well, I don't want it. Well, neither do I.
Very quickly, I noticed that someone's made a documentary about you, The Seventh Python.
Oh, yes. Don't get too excited. Oh. I think it's fallen at the fence of the great rubber barons of the music industry.
I saw the trailer for it, and it looked really good.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's all right. I think it could do with a cut here and there,
okay,
but it's very difficult for me to judge. But yep, lots of people are very kind about it, and it's kind of unique in a way. But if you can show it at festivals and things like that,
yeah,
without having to pay any sync fees,
yeah.
Well, these days the music business has gone absolutely crazy.
Really?
And it's probably made it impossible for the distributor to actually afford to put
balls
it out. Exactly. I might take the rough cut that I've got and slip it out anonymously.
Just do some hooky copy. Sell it on eBay, fiver a pop.
Listen, that famous Japanese food, so sue me.
Is there anything else have you got any plans for the next year or so? Is it just promoting
I'm going into this medium. I'm going into radio.
You're doing proper radio.
No, on my own radio.
Okay.
It's because, I mean, discovering how to do it hands-on.
Yeah.
It made it feel like being an art student again, you know, painting with sound. And I want to do a thing called Radio Noir.
And I like the sound of that.
To the last ditch, you know, the dying throes of a satirist. but no, I like to, you know, put these bits of pieces and observations in with music.
Yeah.
And I've got this. All my catalogues come back.
Right. Oh, okay.
Apart from the early Bonzo stuff.
Yeah. So you own it?
Yeah.
Oh, brilliant.
I can actually put it out. And so I'm going to sort of make people aware of the thing like that. There's an awful lot of activity on YouTube as well. I mean,
right.
People, you know, Twitter, and I thought, I didn't know that. So we'll see. You know,
okay.
And we've got a website called InnisBookOfRecords.com.
Right.
Which I invite everybody to go and sign up to.
We will put a link to it on our
webpage. We're slowly getting there because we want to have it, you know, obviously it's got to pay its way, but it's not going to be sort of, you know, pay now, you know, here's a sticker, you can't come back in again kind of thing. We want people to contribute to it in the end, but
okay,
the logistics of trying to keep the loonies out,
yeah,
and trying to make it an open forum are quite
that's your fighting a losing battle. The internet is the breeding ground for lunatics and arseholes.
It's a pity. But until then, you know, I mean, at least you can sort of say, well, go there and have a look at that, and go there and have a look at that, or have a listen to this, and soon people will be able to download things. But well, I'm actually going to put out the Best Bits Part 2 is going to come out, because I've got Episode 3 and 4 of In His Own World to put out, and then it'll be Radio Noir. But it's really giving me the enthusiasm and the impetus, and apart from the fact of owning my stuff again.
Excellent. OK, well, listen, we will plug the website, we will plug the CD, and we will plug the gig. Nilis, it's a pleasure to meet you. Thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you, Ian.
There we go.
Well, I was going
to say... That was a great rehearsal.